begin this evening on Numbers, the 28th chapter. And if everything goes as it's planned, next week will be our last class on Numbers, at least this time around. So in chapter 28, the last seven chapters of Numbers, we have some interesting things happening, okay? And we have, again, in chapter 28, 29, and 30, we kind of have, for want of a better term, a hodgepodge of different topics that are going to come up. But they're all relative to what of commands that God gives to the new generation, which is gathered where? Where are we? The plains of Moab. We're in the plains of Moab. Well, not us here physically, but the context where we are, they're in the plains of Moab. They've traveled for 2 or 3 years, right? Yes. Pretty close to 40. Okay. Exactly how close to 40? Probably within half a year, or maybe even closer than that. So their time in wandering around in the wilderness with God leading them is about to be over. And so we see the last few chapters deal with that. And in chapter 28, we're dealing with commands regarding offerings in verses 1 through 5. None of these commands are new commands. God's just revealing this to a new generation. Because what's happened to all the previous generation, at least the males? They died. Why'd they die?
Because God told them they weren't going into the promised land.
Okay. Yeah, because they rebelled. That's why they died. And if you rebel against God, what happens? You die. Okay? It's pretty simple. Okay? I was about to say something rather trite, but I will not do that. That would be inappropriate. I'll keep it to myself. So that's what we're looking at here. We're looking at old commands being given to this new generation, and how are they supposed to deal with things when they get into the land of promise. So Numbers 28, verses 1 and 2. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, command the sons of Israel and say to them, you shall be careful to present my offering, my food for my offerings by fire, of a soothing aroma to me at their appointed time. So what's God basically telling them? I'm sorry?
Follow my directions.
Follow my directions. Absolutely. That's exactly what he's saying. What kind of options do they have? Yeah, none. You don't have any options. This is what you have. You know, that's one of the things that it's very difficult. It was difficult for them to understand, okay? It's difficult for us to understand today many times. Why? Well, we don't have direct commands, but we have commands from God as to how we're supposed to conduct our lives. And if we don't want to be obedient to those commands, why don't we want to be obedient? We want to do what we want to do when we want to do it. And nothing has changed since the Garden of Eden. Man is still the same. And that's the constant battle that individually we all fight. Well, excuse me, I don't know if you guys do, but I do. Okay? The battle is, do I want to be obedient to God and be acceptable in my behavior in His sight, or do I want to do what I want to do? Which frequently, less frequently than in earlier times in my life, doesn't agree with what God wants me to do. And so that's basically what he's telling him. You're going to do, you know, what I want you to do, when, where, and why, relative to what? What's he talking about here? Is he?
Offerings.
He's talking about offerings. Rick's right in a sense. Who do these offerings go to?
God.
What food does God eat? Think about what you're saying. Who gets the majority of the sacrifices, the offerings made to God? Yeah, the priests do. That's how they supported the Levites. God gave the offerings to the Levites. And so that's what they used, what the Levites used for food. And who else got some of the food of offerings? The individual that?
Offered.
That did what?
Offered.
That offered it. Yes, the individual that offered it got part of it too. Okay, so, you know, it wasn't like this. They didn't have refrigeration and freezers back in that day and time. So stuff went bad pretty fast if you didn't gobble it up. And so God made provision for that. He wanted to make sure that we weren't wasting a whole lot of things of his that he had provided. And so we see that he tells them, basically, I'm going to tell you what to do, when to do it. And then he continues in chapter 28, interestingly. Is anybody here? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but have you ever thought, boy, it would have been, you know, interesting to live in the time of the old law? I thought that, you know. I thought that on many occasions. But when we're just dealing with offerings, and that's what this chapter is dealing with, okay? In verses 3 through 8, we have a listing of daily offerings. Now, keep in mind, when we're talking about offerings, who's commanded these offerings? God's commanded these offerings. So these are not what kind of offerings? What are the kind of offerings did the people make? Free will offerings. We're not talking about free will offerings. We are talking here about offerings that are commanded by God for the people of Israel to make to him, okay, irrespective of who ended up actually getting the meat, okay, or the wine or the bread that was offered, okay. But these are offerings that are made to God. And in addition to all of these offerings, okay, then the people also gave free will offerings. Why did they give free will offerings? Why did we give free will offerings to God today? Why do we give free will offerings?
What are free will offerings?
What are free will offerings? Okay, what's a free will offering? Okay, yeah, it comes from your heart. Who decides on a free will offering?
The person giving
it decides on. I want to give this to God, okay? I want to make this offering to God. What does it display to God?
Praise and thanksgiving.
Praise, thanksgiving, goodwill, love for. I mean, you can think of all kinds of things. You know, sometimes we kind of look at the Old Testament and think, well, you know, the things that we kind of key on in the New Testament, love and grace and all of those things, that really didn't exist under the old law. How do I know that it did? I'm sorry?
Free will offerings.
Free will offerings is one of the way. God the same when? Yesterday, today, and forever. God hasn't changed. God hasn't changed. He's always accepted free will offerings and obeisance from the people that love him. And that's what we do today. We worship God. We praise God in song, in a lot of things that we do. Okay? Anybody here make any free will offerings this week? Everybody here has made a free will offering this week. What's the free will offering you made? I'm sorry? You laid by in store, okay? That wasn't what I had in mind. What's the free will offering that all of you are making right now?
Coming here and spending time.
Yes, spending time worshiping the Lord. Okay, that's a free will offering, isn't it? I mean, nobody put a gun to your head and said, hey, you got to go to church tonight. At least I hope not. Maybe sometimes our kids feel that way, but yeah, because we want to be here. I was talking with Marcus before class started, and that was one of the things he was telling me about, how he likes to come on Wednesday night because it's always great to be here with Christians. What an incredibly positive attitude for Marcus. Is how old? 10 year old to have. So anyway, we see these daily offerings. How often were offerings made on a daily basis? Well, I understand daily, but in the morning and in the evening, there were two offerings made on a daily basis. How often? In 365 days in the year, how many offerings were made? 365 times two. Okay, yes. That's how many were made on a day. Oh, that's just daily offerings. Okay, just daily offerings. Because the next one in verses 9 through, can't read my writing, got to turn my glasses. 9 and 10 talks about Sabbath day offering. And the Sabbath day offering, if you read verse 9, okay, or verse 10, it's talking about in verse 9. And then in verse 10, it says, this is the burnt offering of every Sabbath day in addition to the continual burnt offering and its drink offering. And that was the first point. That was the daily offering. So in addition to on the Sabbath day, you made the daily offering. You also made the Sabbath day offering. And then if you go down to verses 11 through 15, you have the first day of the month offering. At the beginning of each of your months, you shall present a burnt offering to the Lord. Okay. This is a burnt offering down in verse 14. This is a burnt offering of each month throughout the years, throughout the months of the year. And you will also make, in verse 15, it talks about a sin offering in addition to the continual burnt offering. The continual burnt offering is what we're talking about making how often? Twice a day. Okay, once in the morning and once in the evening. And so we see all these offerings that they're making. So as I'm sure you've thought many times, there's a lot of blood that's flowing. There's a lot of animals that are dying and being offered as burnt offerings to God. And again, keep in mind that we sometimes think that, well, the carcasses were dragged off and thrown away. Well, maybe the carcass was. Most of the meat wasn't. Most of the meat was eaten by the Levites. That was their food. Or at least that was part of it anyway. And so then in chapter 28, verse 16 through chapter 20, 29, verse 40, we're looking at commands regarding festivals. Okay? And the first festival, of course, in verse 16 through 25, we have the festival of Passover. Then on the 14th day of the first month was known as... Anybody tell me what the first month the Hebrew calendar is? Abib, okay? You might see some calendars after the Babylonian captivity where they had picked up the Babylonian names, where it says the first month is Nisan. It's the same month. It's Abib. It's just got a different name on it, okay? And then on the 14th day of the first month, you shall be the Lord's Passover. On the 15th day of this month shall be a feast of unleavened bread, shall be eaten for 7 days. And so the first of the feasts that they talk about then here in Numbers, the 28th chapter, is this feast of Passover. It happens on the first month of the year, okay? On the first day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work. Anybody tell me what a holy convocation is? The only thing I can think of, it's very similar to the holy convocation that we have when? Every first day of the week. Okay? The people all got together. And what did they do at a holy convocation? They worship God. Okay? They worship God. Okay? And do not ask me, please, because I cannot answer this question. What's the difference between plain old work and laborious work? I have no idea. Okay. But my understanding is, how much work could you do on any one of these days of holy convocation? None. Okay. On the Sabbath, could you fix a meal? Ladies. Steve's shaking his head yes, but it's not, he's not shaking it because that's the correct answer. You had to fix food the day before because that's what was going to be eaten on the Sabbath because you could not work. You ladies couldn't work. I know that really bothers you greatly that you might actually have a day off, but that was the Lord's will, okay? And then he goes on to the next feast is the Feast of Weeks, also known as First Fruits. It's also known as First Fruits. Why was it known as First Fruits? Yes, it's one of the harvests. There are two different harvests that they talk about, and the next feast will be the latter harvest. One is the harvest, I'm trying to remember what the crop was. It was one of the grains. I don't remember which one it was. It came earlier, and that was the Feast of Weeks and First Fruits. And what did you give to the Lord? First, okay, first and best. The first things that you harvested, you gave. And then the next feast, we'll look at it in just a moment, the third one, that they were all required to come to. And then it talks about in verses 1 through 38 of chapter 29, the festivals of the seventh month. What's the seventh month known for primarily? The Day of Atonement, okay? The Day of the Atonement was in the seventh month. In verse 1 of chapter 29, now in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a holy convocation, okay? You shall do no laborious work. It will be to you a day for blowing trumpets. Why do you blow trumpets? For joy, okay? You might blow trumpets to do what? Go to battle, okay? Go to battle. We know that it talks about that. They did that. But primarily, you know, particularly on a month-by-month basis, okay, when you're blowing trumpets as a sign of the joy that you have in the Lord, okay? And it goes on to talk there in the remainder of that section, in verses 1 through 6 in chapter 29, that what they committed. One of the interesting things is that some people question, almost every offering that was made included two things that were non-meat. A drink was one of them, and the other was grain, okay? Virtually every offering that they made included a drink offering, okay, which accompanied, and what did they do with the grain, with the drink offering? I'm sorry? Yeah, it was poured out. Primarily, if I understand correctly, it was poured out where? Yeah, right on the offering, okay? And the grain offering, where did the grain offering go? Same place, okay? It was offered to God, okay? In verses 7 through 11 there in 29, we're talking about the Day of Atonement Festival. Then on the 10th day of this month, of this seventh month, you shall have another holy convocation, and you shall humble yourselves, you shall not do any work, and you shall present a burnt offering to the Lord as a soothing aroma, one bull, one ram, and it goes on and talks about the details of it, which I'm not going to go into here. But the bottom line is, you know, they had certain festivals that all the males had to attend. And the Day of Atonement was actually not one of those. The Passover was one. The Festival of Weeks was one, and this last one that's in talked about in verses 12 through 38, the Festival of Tabernacles, okay? Where do we run into the Festival of Tabernacles in the New Testament? Who was coming into the city? Somebody said it. What were they doing? What did they have the palm branches up? When Jesus came in on the fold, okay? That was one of the special things that was meant there. In verse 12, then on the 15th day of the seventh month, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work. You shall observe a feast to the Lord for 7 days. So we have another 7-day feast. We've already had 2 7-day feasts, okay? They feasted a lot for the Lord, just like we do, or should. And then in verse 13, is you shall present a burnt offering, an offering by fire as a soothing aroma to the Lord. This is interesting. 13 bulls, 2 rams, 14 male lambs, 1 year old, which are without defect, and their grain offering. Fine flour mixed with oil, 3/10 of an ephah for each of the 13 bulls. And that was on the first day of this feast. What did they offer on the second day? 12 bulls. How about the third day? 11 bulls. Fourth day, 10 bulls. Fifth day, 9 bulls. Sixth day, 8 bulls. Seventh day, 7 bulls. And on the eighth day, you shall have a solemn assembly. You shall do no laborious work. Interesting. What day of the week was the eighth day of this festival? No, it didn't change.
But it was on the 15th day of the month. That changes. Right?
No.
Our 15th day of March isn't always on the same day.
You're right. But what's the first day of every month? And the seventh day of every... No, the first day of every month is the first day of every month. It's the first day. The day of the week changes. It's not talking about the day of the weeks here. It's talking about the day of the month. The interesting thing is, if you think about it, again, the Jewish calendar had how many months in it? 13. Each of those months had how many weeks? Each of those months had 4 weeks. I know you guys can get this one. How many days were there in each week? I think I'm going to that class over across the way here. Yeah, that's why it's easy to keep track of it. Okay, the 15th day. Okay, was what day? It was the first day of the week. What today we would call Sunday. Okay, what they called it then, I have no idea, other than the first day of the week. The first of the month always fell on first day of the week. Always. Because they had 7-day weeks. 4 7-day weeks made up a month. They were on a lunar calendar, not a solar calendar. And we have difficulty. I don't know if there's anybody that's on a lunar calendar in our modern times. I don't think so. But You never know. Then in chapter 30, 1 through 16, what are we talking about? We're talking about the same thing in chapter 30. Vows. They're talking about vows. What's the main message from God about making a vow? Keep it. If you make a vow, God's expectation is that you will keep that vow. Okay? How much can you deviate from that? You can't. Okay? If you make a vow today, okay, we're not under the old law, but what do you suppose God's expectation is? If you make a vow, you keep it. Well, why would you say that? There you go. Your yes be yes and your no be no. And our society, unfortunately, even sometimes myself and my brothers, we forget that that's God's expectation. When you make a vow, God's expectation is that you will keep the vow, okay? Even the ones that we make innocently, that we don't think about and we make, God's expectation is that we'll keep them. So anyway, he goes into the first group. 1 and 2, he talks about the vow of a man, okay? If a man makes a vow, God expects him to do what? He expects him to keep it, okay? If a man made a vow back then, okay, what should he do? What should you always do before you make a vow? Yeah, number one, you want to think about it, okay? And number two, I'd recommend you talk to God about it. Okay, but anyway, his expectation is if a man made a vow, there was no way he could get out of it. God expects you to keep it. How about a vow for an unmarried woman? What was the exception for an unmarried woman? If who told her she didn't need to keep the vow? Her who? Her father. Okay, if when her father found out the vow that she had made, he excluded her from it, then or provided her an exception, then she didn't have to keep the vow. Okay, she wasn't held accountable. By whom? She wasn't held accountable by God. Okay, now she may have been held accountable by her fellow man, but theoretically, that too. And then verses 6 through 8 talks about a vow of a married woman. What's the exception there? I'm sorry? Her husband, yes. Yeah, it's no longer her father, okay? It's her husband. If when her husband finds out about it, if when he finds out about it, he does nothing at all about that vow, who has to keep the vow? She does, okay? It was the same for a female daughter, okay, if when the father found out he didn't I don't want to use the term disavow, but I guess that's appropriate, disavow that vow, then she had to keep it. And then it talks in verses 9 through 16 there in chapter 30, it talks about a widow and a divorced woman. And I'm not going to go into that, and you can read that for yourself because it doesn't apply to us today. But God's expectation, the general rule is, if you make a vow, keep your vow. There were exceptions even under the old law, but if you made a vow, you needed to keep your vow. In chapter 31, we have a war against whom? Midianites. Why did the Midianites get in trouble with God? The sin at Mount Oh, come on. Mount Peor. What happened at Mount Peor? Yes, that's where Phinehas killed them both, okay? But the sin was upon whom? Everybody that was involved in the idol worship of Baal of Peor, okay? And symbolically, God killed, do you remember how many people he slew with a plague? 24,000 people before Phinehas killed the two in the tent. And that's why God cursed Midian, because they paid attention to whom? They didn't pay attention to one of the main characters in at least five chapters of the book of Numbers that we've read about. I'm sorry. Balaam, okay? Balaam. Balaam was the priest that was from Aram, and Balak had brought him down to Moab to do what? Curse the Israelites. God told him, okay, you can go, but you are not going to be able to curse Israel. Okay? And so, because he couldn't curse Israel, what did Balaam apparently got the message to Balak on how he could get Israel into trouble with Jehovah. And how was that? Yes, send. Well, send in the women, that's true. That certainly was a part of it. And certainly, ladies, I don't want to blame you. It's no more your fault anyway. The sin was that they turned to whom? They turned to Balaam, they turned to the Baals, okay? Balaam was just a representative of them. Interesting. And I certainly don't understand, and I don't think If I am blessed enough to spend eternity with God that I'm going to talk to God about Balaam, but he's a character that I really, he's strange because he's a priest not only of the Baals, but of who else? He was a priest for God, okay? Not an Aaronic priest, but he was a priest for God. He talked to God. So we have this war in chapter 31. And basically, it's the entire chapter, okay? In verses 1 and 2, God says this, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take full vengeance on the sons of Israel, on the Midianites. Afterward, you will be gathered to your people." What does that mean? You're going to die, okay? Okay. And then 3 through 8, who do we see killed? Okay, Balaam was kind of the last one that's mentioned. He's mentioned in, what verse is that? Oh, yeah, in verse 8 it's mentioned that he was killed. All the males were killed, 5 of their kings were killed, and then Balaam's killed. The women and children are spared. Why? Why were women and children spared in that day and time, generally speaking?
Kept for slaves.
Yeah, they were kept as slaves. Okay, they were considered part of the plunder. Okay? And then we find in verses 10 and 12, all of the Midianite cities were burned. Okay, and Midian, if you remember, was south. Okay, probably on the Arabian Peninsula. And so the army has gone out and fought with them. And then we see in verses 15 and 16, the army has come back, okay? And we see how they're dealing with the captives. And Moses said to them in verse 15, "Have you spared all the women? Behold, these caused the sons of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor. So the plague among the congregation of the... Now therefore, kill every male among the little ones, and kill every woman who has known man intimately. All that the girls who have not known man intimately, spare them for yourselves." So, God got the attraction taken away. It was gone. Okay, all the males. Why did he have all the young men killed? What don't you want to have down the road if you're in a position where you have to kill somebody? I'm sorry?
Just dealing with the vengeance?
Yes, dealing with the vengeance. I think that's what it's talking about. Okay? And again, obviously God's not that he's not capable of dealing with the vengeance, but I get the impression he didn't want his people having to worry about it. And that's why when they took over the land, what were they supposed to do? Wipe them out. All of the Amorite tribes that were in the land of Canaan were supposed to die, were supposed to be exterminated. And then in the latter part of the 31st chapter, he talks about dealing with the unclean. And when he's talking about those that are unclean, okay, what kind of person is he talking about? Who has just come back to the camp? Okay, the soldiers have just come back to the camp, okay? And the soldiers have become unclean how? By killing people, okay? Not by killing people per se, but being in contact with dead bodies, blood, okay? And then in verse 1 it says, "And you camp outside the camp 7 days," he's talking to the army, "whoever has killed any person, whoever has touched any slain, purify yourselves, you and your captives, on the third day, and on the seventh day, you shall purify yourselves. Every garment, every article of leather, all the hair of goat's hair, and all articles of wood." Then Eleazar, the priest, said to the men of war who had gone to battle, "This is the statute of the law which the Lord has commanded Moses. Only the gold and silver, bronze, iron, the tin, the lead, everything you can stand that can stand the fire, you can pass through the fire. And they shall be clean, but it shall be purified with the water of impurity." What's the water of impurity? Does anybody remember? That's the water that they make up. We talked about that. What gives it the ability to purify? God gives it the ability to purify. You put these physical things together, you mix them together in a bucket, and you pour it on something. How does that purify? It only purifies because God says it purifies. Yes, go ahead, Rick. Oh, 5 minutes, thank you. And then we have in the remainder of chapter 31, and I'm not going to go through this, is the division of the booty relative to the spoils of war that they received. But what's interesting, how was the booty split? That's what I found interesting. 32 through 41 in chapter 31, the booty remained from the spoil which the men of war had plundered. And it gives this great list of 675,000 sheep. So they got a lot, okay? 72,000 cattle, 61,000 donkeys, okay? And that was just the warriors' half. The booty was split in two. The warriors got half of it. Who got the rest of it? Everybody else, the congregation that was left behind, okay, that didn't go to war, but what did they do? Yeah, they were at the home front. They were the ones providing the support. They were the ones that were cheering the warriors when they came back. I say that a little facetiously, but I suspect that that was true. And it's interesting that out of this practice of, historically speaking, okay, when an army went to war, how was the booty typically split? Actually, historically, I don't think that's true, but it may be. Okay. Well, the king got part of it. The warriors got part of it. But if you don't take care of the people at home, the next time you have to go to war, what's going to happen? And human beings are a warring people. Okay, next week we will start on chapter 32. And chapter 32 is the settlement of the Transjordan tribes. And hopefully we'll get through 32 through 35. We're not going to look at 36. And the reason I'm not going to look at 36 is because 36 is a repetition of 27, which we looked at last week. So you're welcome to go out and verify that I'm not smoking funny cigarettes when I say that, but it is the chapter. Both of those chapters talk about the inheritance of the daughters of one of the tribes of Manasseh. Machir, I think, was the father.